Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm Senator Mia Costello, and joining me this afternoon is Senator Rivek. Welcome. Vice Chair Senator Holland, welcome. Senator Gray Jackson, welcome. And Senator Stevens is on his way. I'd like to thank the recording secretary, Carrie, and the LIO operator, Marissa, and also my committee aide, Katie McCall, who is helping this afternoon. The time is 2 p.m., and today we are hearing Senate Bill 56. This is the extension of the COVID-19 disaster emergency by Governor Dunleavy, and today we will have the bill explained to us. I did want to let members know that I welcome questions during the testimony, and online we have individuals who are available and in person here for questions. So I'll briefly go through who's online. And then I'd like to invite Commissioner Adam Crum from the Department of Health and Social Services forward to explain the bill to the committee. So online we have Sarah Chambers, who's with the Department of Commerce. Lori Wingheyer, who's the Director of Division of Insurance, is online in Anchorage. Welcome, Lori. Glenn Klinkhart, who's the Executive Director of AMCO. Colleen Glover, who's with the Department of Revenue. And then here in person, we have Commissioner Adam Crum. Do we need to take an at ease? And I'd also like to welcome Senator Gary Stevens. Good afternoon, Senator.
Thank you.
So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the commissioner. Senator Stevens, we have a host of folks available for questions, and I do welcome questions as the commissioner goes through the sections of the bill. So with that, welcome, commissioner, and please introduce yourself for the committee, and then go ahead and walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Adam Crum, and I serve as the Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you for considering SB 56, which is extending the COVID-19 emergency declaration today. Today, I'd like to walk through an overview of SB 56, a summary of changes that occurred in the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, and provide an overview of why the extension of the authorities are necessary for Alaska's public health response. On January 15th, Governor Dunleavy issued a public health emergency disaster declaration, in part based on the continued widespread outbreak of COVID-19 in communities throughout Alaska and the fact that vaccines and treatments are now available to Alaskans. The issuance and continuation of a public health emergency declaration will continue to support and facilitate our public health response. SB 56 proposes, first, to extend the public health emergency disaster declaration to March 15th, 2021, to extend the authority for certain boards in the Department of Commerce to continue using courtesy licenses to support our healthcare workforce needs during this time, to continue the expanded flexibility for utilizing telehealth in Alaska, which has been hugely important for older Alaskans and for behavioral and mental health services during this time, and also particularly heavily used in rural Alaska. To continue allowing an expedited fingerprinting process between agencies to allow for expedited licensing. It also continues to allow for meeting of shareholders of Native corporations, and members of a nonprofit corporation to be held by electronic communication in compliance with the guidelines adopted by each of the type of entities' boards of directors. And it continues to allow for certain charitable gaming activities to be conducted online for a temporary period of time for certain charitable organizations. So four amendments were adopted in the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. The first one was it changed the extension date to March 15th, 2021. It added a provision to provide for immunity for liability for actions taken or not taken during a gap between February 14th and when a bill is enacted into law as it pertains to health orders. The third was it added a provision that requires a signed informed consent form for the administration of the COVID-19 vaccine. It added a provision that allows an individual to object to receive the COVID-19 vaccine based on religious, medical, or other grounds. This is another great clarification. The vaccine is not and will not be mandated by the state of Alaska, but this is further assurance to the general public. So for the reason for this bill, the state's latest phase in the response, and as some like to characterize it, our state's transition to recovery, is dependent on a number of tools and authorities that are available to the administration under the Alaska Declaration Act, such as, but namely, AS 26.23.020G10, which allows for the allocation and distribution of a scarce commodity, such as the vaccine and other available treatments. We have also relied on these other additional authorities: suspension and waiver of regulations and statutes that may prevent or impede or delay action necessary to respond, emergency procurement and contracting, hire of emergency personnel to support response efforts, transferring of personnel of state departments for the purpose of performing or facilitating in the response, making use of temporary housing, general immunity for associated with responders during this public health emergency, allocating and distributing scarce resources such as PPE or personal protective equipment, testing supplies, vaccine, and treatments, assisting local government with no public health authority the infrastructure of services that they need to support their communities, as well as establishing alternative care sites. So the Alaska Disaster Act is simply the mechanism in place that we currently have in Alaska. Other states have many definitions. They'll have disaster declarations. They'll also have public health emergency powers to where they can do these items. In Alaska, the only way we have access to these powers is under AS 26, which is the Alaska Disaster Declaration Act.
Commissioner?
Yes, ma'am.
If I could interrupt for a moment, appreciate what you've shared so far. So one of the questions that we've had about this declaration has the administration adequately given the argument that it is needed? And so one of the things I'm aware of is that our state statutes allow for emergency procurement. Can you tell me why we need a different method for procurement in this legislation and we are not using our emergency procurement powers that we already have in state statute?
Madam Chair, if there's someone from Department of Administration online to answer that question.
Oh, okay. And also, I want to mention to the committee, Brian Fisher is also online. He's with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the operations manager.
And if Madam Chair, if no one from admin is on, Brian Fisher may be able to address part of that.
Okay. Mr. Fisher, did you hear the question?
I did, Madam Chair, and for the record, this is Brian Fisher, Operations Manager with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and Incident Commander for the COVID-19 Unified Command for the state. I don't have a specific answer right now. I will look up the procurement code and the Procurement Act and as it relates to Alaska Statute 2623 and may be able to provide an answer shortly.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fisher. I mean, essentially all you have to do is type in emergency procurement, so it's pretty clear that the emergency powers were contemplated by a previous legislature, so that would be great. While you're online and answering that question, another issue that has come up is that we've been told that in order for the governor to dispatch the National Guard, this legislation is required. There's some confusion about that because it's my understanding that the governor is the head of the Guard and can call on them at any time. Are you prepared to answer that question?
Yes, Madam Chair. Brian Fisher for the record again. So the Department of Law has advised that although Article 3, Section 19 of the Alaska Constitution clearly states that the governor is commander-in-chief of the National Guard, there are specific provisions both in 26.05.070 as well as 26.23.020F that gives the governor explicit authority to call the National Guard to active state service when there is a disaster declared under the definitions in the Disaster Act.
So, Mr. Fisher, are you saying that the Constitution does not give the governor the adequate authority and that the disaster statutes that we have in our laws provides additional powers?
Madam Chair, that's correct. The Constitution does say the governor can call out the National Guard, but doesn't explicitly say that for disasters. There are statutes on the books that speak specifically to calling them out for disaster situations.
Okay, thank you. While I've interrupted the commissioner, do any other members have a question? No question? Senator Stevens?
This is a little complex issue. This is the first time I have heard this bill. I know others have been in other committees that have dealt with it, but that is an important issue. So it does seem to me, Mr. Fisher, what you were saying, and make sure this is absolutely clear, that the Constitution does not give the governor the full authority he needs or you would like to see him have, and that SB 56 does do that.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is the Department of Law's interpretation.
Thank you.
And to follow up with Senator Stevens' question, could we get that in writing so that the legislature has that before us and we can consider that kind of surprising revelation, if you ask me? But that would be great if we could have that. While we've taken a break, Commissioner, it's my understanding that a disaster declaration is useful so that the governor and the executive branch can waive or temporarily suspend statutes and regulations. And online, and for those listening, there is a complete list of COVID outbreak disaster order relating to the suspension of sections of the statutes, the laws that we pass here in the legislature, and the administrative code. And I'm not sure if you're able to answer this. It might be somebody else. But I was a little bit confused why we are requiring or we are asking that teacher applicants do not have to submit passing scores on competency exams. So we're suspending that, for example, I'm reading right here, the requirement that initial teaching certificate applicants submit content area examination scores. So we're suspending these requirements that teachers pass tests with a certain competency level in order to be hired to teach. And I was curious if I know the Department of Health and Social Services has nothing to do with the teachers, but if there's anybody online who can explain why the legislature should support waiving competency examinations for teachers. But anyway, I'll just put that question out there, and maybe we could get that question answered. So with that, Commissioner, please feel free to continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Adam Crum, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. So what we do know is that studies from around the country have showed us that states that acted early and quickly by setting up testing sites, robust contact tracing processes, disseminating information quickly, responding timely to public concerns, expanding healthcare capacity, building our healthcare workforce, quickly standing up large mass vaccination sites, and remaining consistent by not letting the foot off the pedal have kept lower case numbers, lower death rates, and lower hospitalizations versus other states that were slower to act. Without the ability to be nimble and respond to the public health threat to Alaskans, our state would not be ranked number one as the number one safest state in multiple metrics, based on lowest deaths, lowest hospitalizations, lowest case counts, and highest vaccination rates in the United States. We're also second in the nation for testing per capita. This will change if we don't have the ability to respond quickly to requests for support from the healthcare system and communities. There are several authorities granted under the Alaska Disaster Act that allow the state to have nimble and flexible response, one of which is the ability to use a more efficient procurement process. Department of Health and Social Services standard procurement process is to follow the invitation for bid, IFB, or request for proposal, RFP process, as outlined in Alaska Statute 36.30.110 and 36.30.210. This process can take between 30 days to 6 months, depending upon the complexities of the proposal. The public health emergency gives us the authority to use emergency procurement followed by a competitive bid process for long-term contracts. This is critical when hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and communities do not have or have exhausted their resources and are looking to the state for help. Emergency procurement, followed with a competitive bid process for long-term contracts, is what separates us from other states. We acted quickly to contain the transmission of COVID. The successes of this response are a direct result of the authorities provided under the Alaska Disaster Act. Additionally, treatment options are continually being researched in both the outpatient and hospital settings. There has been one fully approved COVID-19-specific treatment option. This is called remdesivir, an antiviral medication used in a hospital setting for severe illness. And the FDA has issued two emergency use authorizations, or EUAs, for two monoclonal antibodies used in outpatient setting to treat COVID-19 within the first 10 days of diagnosis. The state does not prescribe treatment options, but does help allocate the scarce resource of monoclonal antibodies. The authority under the Alaska Disaster, the ADA, allows for the allocation of scarce resources, such as these treatments and therapeutics. The authorities allowed under AS 26-23-020 allows HESC the authority to allocate scarce resources, rapidly engage in contracts to respond to new outbreaks, continue testing and sequencing of positive specimens. Sequencing positive specimens is critical to identifying when the variants enter Alaska so we can notify Alaskans and understand the epidemiological impacts and respond accordingly. As we have seen in other countries, the variants can accelerate transmission and increase the severity of the disease, which is why we are focused on vaccinating our most vulnerable Alaskans first to reduce the severity of the disease and transmission. For these reasons, the governor has asked for the January 15th, 2021 public health emergency declaration to be extended so that we can progress into the recovery phase of this historic public health incident. In closing, I have 4 points. First, without the public health emergency, this state is extremely limited on how we respond to the pandemic, which is why it's required. Second, without the public health emergency, we are concerned about the ability to allocate scarce resources like vaccine and monoclonal antibodies. Third, without the public health emergency, there is no centralized management to allocate scarce resources, which jeopardizes state vaccine administration framework. Fourth, without the public health emergency, communities that do not have local health powers will be left behind with limited to no support. The public health emergency is a time-limited authority to respond to this immediate threat. The extension of this allows us the opportunity to enter into recovery phase, and I ask for your support to allow us the authorities and tools that we need during this phase. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. So this is the Labor and Commerce Committee, and I do appreciate that there are so many individuals online. I want to bring the members' attention to page 9, lines 14 through, to the next page, to line 5 on the next page. This is the charitable gaming online ticket sales. It deals with raffles and lotteries, dog mushers contest, a derby, or type of classic. It talks about the ability to run these types of charitable gaming activities online. And while I don't discount that it would be really convenient to do that, I believe that the administration needs to make a case why this is so important in a disaster declaration law. And I do believe that Colleen Glover's online with Department of Revenue. Perhaps she's the best one to answer my question. Colleen?
This is Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director, Department of Revenue. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, Chair Costello, the reason it is in this disaster declaration is online raffles and the derbies and classics that you just discussed are not currently allowed under current statute. What happened when this pandemic started, most of these raffles, right, are conducted at, you know, public events, and the recipients of the proceeds are all charitable or municipal organizations, and they really didn't have an avenue to sell raffle tickets. without being able to do it online. And that's how it got put into this the disaster declaration and the health orders by the administration to allow this. We thought it was important. The proceeds go to valuable organizations in the state that were greatly hurt by the pandemic, and that's why it's allowed, because it's not currently allowed in, under current statute.
Thank you, Ms. Glover. Is it possible to provide to me, and I'll share with the committee, a list of charitable gaming operations in Alaska so that we can see who would be benefiting if this disaster declaration were extended?
Yes, Chair Costello, I can send you the report of all of the permittees. There's about 1,100 permittees that do some kind of games. If you want specifics to those just doing raffles in these games, we can get that kind of slice of information to you.
I think what I'm looking for is just simply a list of who would benefit if this were to pass.
Okay, Chair Costello, we can get that to you today.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Commissioner, I've been reading a lot of stuff, a lot of people's reaction. Do they think they're reacting to the bill in front of us? But it appears to me that they're often reacting to their own community's rules. And I think that needs to be clarified before people start testifying here. People are saying, are thinking, many people seem to think that that this bill is what causes restaurants to be closed in their communities, forces them to wear a mask in their communities. I'd like you to clarify that and make sure that we understand exactly what this bill does and how much of what's happening in our state is because of local communities and their decisions.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, thank you very much for that, sir. Yes, this does not affect the ability for communities to enact their own health mandates. For example, home rule communities, Anchorage, Cordova, Ketchikan, and Juneau, can enact their own emergency orders. Other communities have similar powers and abilities as well. And so the state disaster declaration is mutually exclusive from those events. And so those local communities can continue to, you know, protect their citizens as they see fit through emergency orders, through assembly powers, into their mayor.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that. That allows them to continue. But what I want to hear from you is there anything in this bill that closes restaurants or demands that you wear a mask in Kodiak?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, no, sir. We as a state, we have tried to do two main things with this through our disaster powers throughout this response, is to be both responsive and responsible. Early on in this process, we acted quick with the limited information that we had, and we put forward recommendations, and we had to, you know, affect certain businesses and identify those items. But then less than 3 weeks later, we put out a plan to reopen, and then as of May, there have been no restrictions on businesses by the state of Alaska. Our goal has moved into the responsible phase, which is trying to provide community support, the personal protective equipment they need to support their staff, and remove all barriers to make sure that the public can continue operations and that we could actually maintain both health and safety and the economic operations of Alaskans. And so for this bill, as we put this forward, this is not an intent for us to continue any sort of authority from the state. It's simply for us to manage the response to get the affected items that we know, such as the therapeutics and the vaccine, as we have mentioned, safely and out the door, because it's the logistics involved with that. Sometimes identifying certain air carriers and transportation in order to even move these high ultra cold storage items out the door, we have to rapidly identify a transportation agency, set up a contract with them to deliver, and even in remote areas have identified and paid for health strike teams, so to speak, which are contractors which we pay to go out into rural areas to help administer vaccines, and even to use health contractors like this to administer these vaccines to homebound citizens who are at high risk.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So I just hope that the public will focus on what this bill does and what it doesn't do, and not assume that it is a font of all everything that has occurred in our state. That the local communities have many rights, and they can enforce what they want. I think that's very clear, and I appreciate your clarifying that. I hope people can see the point here, the difference between the two.
Any further questions? Commissioner, I do have a question, and I was hoping you could clarify what specifically this bill does in relation to the state of Alaska receiving federal funds. How are we affected positively if we pass this or negatively if we don't? And if you could specifically mention that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So one item in particular, I'll say this, and if I come out of turn, Brian Fisher can correct me, but because of the federal major disaster declaration, Alaska is actually accessed. There's no issue with us receiving FEMA funds, whether or not this disaster declaration is in place. The other item is there's a federal public health emergency, which is issued by Health and Human Services at the federal level. And this is issued on a 90-day basis. The most recent one was January 21st, extending 90 days out. What this does is actually allows CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to actually do an increased FMAP, or federal match to the state, of 6.2% to our Medicaid program, meaning that we are saving general fund dollars while the Medicaid program is administered. Our ability to receive that is not tied to the state disaster declaration. Another item, though, that we were just made aware of on Monday, it was reiterated to us by the Food and Nutrition Service under the USDA. They administer the SNAP program, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. What they reminded us was that it is a state disaster declaration is entirely tied to our ability to receive what they call EA, or emergency assistance funds. Typically, the state of Alaska will administer for the federal government $15 million a month in SNAP benefits. Under the ongoing COVID response and an act of Congress, they actually enhanced the eligibility criteria, expanded that a little bit, and increased the benefits to an extra $8 million a month that we administer in SNAP benefits. This is a month-to-month basis. We have been working with the Food and Nutrition Service trying to see if there is a waiver that we can attain. Because they do this on a month-to-month basis, we are good for the month of February, but if we do not have a state disaster declaration in place in the month of March, we will lose $8 million a month in SNAP benefits.
Thank you, Commissioner. So just to clarify, and you had mentioned this in the previous committee when Senator Shelley Hughes asked, is our FMAP match affected? And you said no. And again, today you said that you do not need, the administration does not need this legislation in order to receive our 6.2% FMAP. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay. And then in terms of the SNAP program, so is the administration currently in the process of requesting a waiver? And if you're successful in getting that waiver, do you indeed then receive that funding?
At this point, sorry, I apologize, Madam Chair, at this point in time, there is no historical precedent for that waiver. And so that is what we're working with Food and Nutrition Service about. Because of the length of time of the response, they said they are at least willing to hear us in conversation. And so we're trying to figure that out, whether or not we need a state disaster declaration in place. As of now, the information they told us on Monday is we do. We must have it in place in order to receive those benefits.
Okay. And correct me if I'm assuming wrongly, but are you in contact with other states, commissioners of health and social services? And if so, I know that not every state has actually issued disaster declarations. So what are your colleagues across the country saying to you, and are they recommending that you pursue a waiver because, continuing for multiple years under a disaster declaration just in order to receive a very important program, but it just seems that a waiver would be something that would benefit the state of Alaska to have.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that. So the official language from FNS, Food Nutrition Service, says it's a state disaster declaration or public health emergency. And what we do have, what we don't have in Alaska is actually anything in statute that allows a public health emergency on its own outside of a disaster declaration. Remember back, Governor Walker had to issue a disaster declaration for public health emergency in order to issue naloxone or Narcan kits in order for opioid addiction. And so when we reach out to other, my colleagues in other states, we stay in touch through the National Governors Association. And based upon their latest research, Currently, every state in the country except for Michigan either has a statewide public health emergency or disaster declaration in place, because their ability to actually have those varies on a statewide basis.
Thank you, Commissioner. That's very interesting. So I do want to come back to the procurements, because we've been told that the disaster declaration really sets the tone for you to be able to effectively manage, and you've mentioned the procurement rules that govern you right now can be waived with this declaration. But I just, for the sake of the committee and the public listening, I do want to quote from Title 3630.310, Emergency Procurements. And from your answer just now, one thing I'm gonna ask the members to pay close attention to is it sounds to me like the Commissioner of Administration actually has the ability to declare an emergency, whereas right now you're telling me that the U.S. Commissioner do not. But I'll go ahead and read from 3630.310, Emergency Procurements. Procurements may be made under emergency conditions as defined in regulations adopted by the Commissioner, that's of Administration, when there exists a threat to public health, welfare, or safety, when a situation exists that makes a procurement through competitive sealed bidding or competitive sealed proposals impracticable or contrary to the public interest or to protect public or private property. An emergency procurement need not be made through competitive sealed bidding or competitive sealed proposals, but shall be made with competition that is practicable under the circumstances. So that tells me that that's an expedited procurement. And I may, I would like clarification from perhaps Department of Law of whether or not it just deals with the Department of Administration. But it sounds like where other states provide the commissioner the ability to declare a public health in a situation, in Alaska, we don't have that authority. And so we are thrown into this environment where we've just reviewed, you know, at the beginning of the meeting I mentioned that one of the things that we actually have allowed is we've allowed for teachers to not have to pass competency tests because of this emergency. Now, I mean, obviously I think it's important that we hire as many teachers as we can. But anyway, so, and the members do have a copy of the pages and pages of administrative orders that the administration has had to sort of put aside in order to address the COVID-19. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a question just for clarity. So you said EA funds for SNAP, $15 million a month plus another $8 million, which brings it to $23 million. So the $8 million that we'll lose is part of the $23 million. Is that what you're talking about?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, yes. Okay. Our typical allocation is $15 million a month in benefits. The emergency assistance is the $8 million.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this is a big issue. I mean, $8 million a month is almost $100 million a year, I assume. This is for assistance to people who are in poverty and need food. I guess, you know, Madam Chair, I know there are a lot of issues we don't really know the answers to right now. And maybe we'll find that there's a waiver. Maybe we won't find that. And that's why it seems to me it makes sense to do a 30-day extension and giving us time to really get into detail on anything that we don't have the answers to right now. I understand you're saying that we need to talk to the Department of Law and get their position, and that would all take time. This emergency declaration ceases to exist on Valentine's Day, is that right? You know, maybe it's not the best situation that we could hope for, but it seems to me a 30-day extension would allow us to find the answers to some of these questions. The last thing we want to do is to provide people over $100 million in food assistance that those people really need it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And if I can respond to that, Senator Stevens, if I heard the commissioner correctly, the state is going to receive those funds through February, but I do think it's important, and I support SNAP funding. I want to be clear about that. I don't want to read in the paper tomorrow that I don't, but I think we need to be clear that that's okay through February, but what I heard the commissioner say is in order to continue that, the commissioner of Hess would need the authority through legislation to declare an public health emergency. And I would be open to having the legislature contemplate that, because I think there's a compelling reason to perhaps pursue that avenue in cases where you really have a narrow focus. We have the emergency procurement. We do need to look at the powers that the administration has. And on that point, I did want to mention for the public and the members of this committee, there are many sections of this bill that, and I've highlighted a few of them, including the charitable gaming and the dog mushing, online raffles and things like that, that to me as a lifelong Alaskan, a legislator, a parent, I just don't see that rises to the level of a disaster declaration. So on that point, Senator Stevens, I wanted to mention that in this bill, there are several sections that have bills that have been introduced. Senator Wilson, Senate Bill 24, the shareholder meetings online, is currently in this committee. It's had its first hearing, and we will hear it again and move it out. Senate Bill 78 was introduced this morning. That deals with the telemedicine portion, lifted directly out of this legislation so that we can contemplate that, get the appropriate testimony. Senate Bill 77 was another bill that was introduced today. That is a committee bill that looks at charitable gaming. You know, Senator Stevens and members of the committee, it's my position that if some of these changes make sense to put in permanent statute, then why attach them to the coattails of a disaster declaration when, if we want online gaming to occur, let's look at the statute and change the law so that our laws become COVID aware and that we're not having to live under the constant blanket of a COVID disaster, but that as society changes, we change our laws to reflect some of the things that, you know, that we're hearing about disasters. And I believe that the emergency procurement laws that we have on our books were contemplated in that situation, because one of the things we've heard is that, well, it takes a long time to go through all the checks and balances to protect the public when you use public dollars to procure something, and certainly we all can support that. But in an emergency, I think it makes sense that you can expedite that process, and so we do have that on the books. And Senator Stevens, I think your comments are well taken. It's my intention to move this bill out today with looking at the will of the committee. We have, as I mentioned, multiple pieces of legislation that can go through a thorough vetting process. And if the governor needs the charitable gaming, you know, that's what he's told us he needs. So it's not an ideal situation to be in a pandemic. But with that, I just, you know, wanted to share that with the commissioner and those online. Senator Holland.
So in your testimony, I believe you stated the current bill is the bridge to the recovery phase. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving dates on this. And I don't know if the recovery phase was originally thought of as September. But is it realistic to think we could be in the recovery phase in 30 days from February 15? And would it not require an emergency disaster declaration for the recovery phase?
Through the chair, to Senator Holland. Outside of the emergency procurement, which I appreciate the chair bringing that up, because that's not outside of my department. That's an interesting thing to look into. I look forward to seeing the Department of Law's opinion. One of the biggest items is the ability to actually allocate scarce resources, such as the therapies and the vaccine. So at this point in time, what we are trying to evaluate at the Department of Law, and we're actually having conversations with our federal partners, is yes, we can receive the vaccine, but can we actually distribute the vaccine, this scarce resource, in any sort of organized manner without the ability afforded to us under AS 2623? And so that is something that is a pending question. And so when you ask about the length of time that came forward, really when we look at this, we do anticipate a larger allocation of vaccine available in March, and then increasing April, May. And so our goal is knowing that it's just a personal choice. Individuals who want to take the vaccine, we want to make sure it's available. And so Senator Hughes in a prior committee had asked, like, you know, what is the end zone for us? And for us, it is to make sure that vaccine is widely available and distributed, waiting for Alaskans who want to take it. And it's not necessarily even getting the shots in arms. Once it's out there and people, it's available to them and it's in place, then we can stand down from the state side.
Thank you.
Senator Holland, any further questions? Oh, okay. With that, I do want to thank everyone who's made themselves available to the committee for questions and thank the commissioner for being here today. My intention is to now move into public testimony, followed by any amendments that the committee wants to contemplate. And then my intention is to move the bill out. So with that, are there any final comments or questions for the commissioner before he stays and listens to the public testimony? Okay, seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease. Okay, I'd like to call the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee back to order. And now I'm going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 56. And I know we have individuals online, appreciate that. And I will call on you, and then I will ask you to try to keep your comments as close to 2 minutes as possible out of respect for the people who want to testify. And then that way it gives everyone a chance. My intention is to hear from everyone who would like to testify either here in Juneau or who's online. Okay, so with that, hi, Katie. I see you're first in line to testify. I appreciate you calling in. Katie Botts, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and then provide your testimony.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, Katie, we can hear you.
Okay, so my name is Katie Boat, and I live in Juneau, Alaska. But recently, I've been working in Kodiak, Alaska, where I grew up. And I would like legislators to please kill SB 56 in honor of the people of Alaska and to make up a new bill, a bill that has people first, compared to health organization and government control, because that's essentially what's been going on, is that government and health organization are taking over people's human rights and constitution. Also, I understand that different municipalities, Anchorage, Juneau, and Kodiak, in fact, are allowed to enforce their own mandates, but these mandates that different municipalities are still enforcing started from the government level. So if Governor Dunleavy can waiver the state statute and the U.S. Constitution to make up mandates that collide with our constitutional rights, then I ask respectfully that the state legislator waive that same thing to make sure that the municipalities stop these unconstitutional mandates on a municipality level so that we can go back to normal and breathe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Katie, and thank you. You follow the legislature, and I really appreciate that you call in to testify. Next, we have Lisa Perinron with the Department of Public Safety. Lisa? Oh, she's probably online for questions, so thank you for being here. I will skip the government folks here. Tiffany Quirk from Eagle River. Okay, it looks like Tiffany's no longer online. did want to mention that you are welcome to provide any public testimony in writing for the committee, and it will be shared. Next, Adam Heikef from Homer.
Hello there. It's a bit crackly on my end, but if you can hear me, all right, I'll proceed.
Go ahead, and we'll give it our best shot to listen, and I think we can understand.
Okay, I will proceed. My name is Adam Heikef. I represent myself and my wife. We live in District P in Homer, your district, Senator Stevens, and we have no financial interest in this bill. So you have said that this isn't about masks or shutdowns or mandates, and you are correct in saying so. But as the previous speaker said, the local businesses take their lead from the state, and the city councils who do issue these mandates use the disaster declaration to justify the mandates and shutdowns. I hate to say it, but I believe people in general are brainwashed into looking to the government to care for and provide them for them. Whether you all like it or not, when the public hears emergency disaster declaration, they hear danger. They don't hear procurement or logistics. And it's my firm belief that a year out from the emergency, the first COVID case, we are no longer in that emergency state. We have treatments and vaccines. Unfortunately, the people of Alaska seem to look to government to tell them that it's safe to go back to normal life. Businesses and citizens are going to continue to be afraid until they get the green light from those who they see in authority. I completely disagree with this mentality as an Alaskan and as an American, but I accept people as they are. I've heard Senator Hughes and Senator Costello press the question continually about whether or not the contents of this bill can be legislated without an emergency declaration. I've listened to the committees for about a week now, and I believe the answer is a resounding yes. I'm opposed to this bill, but if it still passes, I want those elected to serve to bust their butts for the next 30 days to amend existing statutes and make this declaration obsolete. I still see no reason for this bill to continue, nor the emergency declaration, and I yield back my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Val McKay from Anchorage. Val, if you could provide your testimony to the committee.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. My name is Valerie McKay, born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, and I absolutely agree with what they're saying. The municipalities are definitely following the lead with the verbiage. I promise you, they don't understand procurement. When I called, I was opposed to this bill. When I called, I was absolutely opposed. But I also have family that would benefit the fast vaccination and distribution and definitely their food stamps. The SNAP benefits are something some people are severely relying on because they're not able to actually work their jobs. The industries are all closed down. So, like I said, originally I called, I was totally opposed to this bill, but now I'm for it just to help the little guy out. And I hope to goodness that people understand why I changed my mind, and I hope that the lower governments understand that it's just logistics. They need to take their lead from different verbiage.
Thank you very much.
That's all.
Thank you very much, Val. I appreciate that you called in. Next, Jill McLeod from Anchorage.
Sorry, did you call Jill McLeod?
Yes, I did.
Oh, great. Thank you. Senator Costello and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, for the record, my name is Jill McLeod, and I am an attorney at Dorsey & Whitney in Anchorage, Alaska, and I am working with my colleagues here, Sienna Caruso and Bonnie passed on a pro bono effort on a legislative bill to permanently amend the Alaska Corporations Code. I am calling to specifically comment on Section 8 of this bill, which relates to the suspension of the Alaska Corporations Code to allow for virtual meetings by remote communication. And I think you'll all recall when the pandemic struck in March of last year, several of our clients reached out to us with concerns about the ability to notice and conduct annual shareholder meetings. And under Alaska law, corporations must have an annual shareholder meeting in person at a place as provided in the corporation's bylaws. When this issue was brought to our attention, we worked with the administration, and as you know, an emergency order was declared suspending that the relevant sections of the Corporations Code, and Senate Bill 241 passed. It appears that Section 8 of this bill will do the same thing. It will temporarily suspend the requirements of the Corporations Code to allow corporations to hold their annual shareholder meetings remotely by means of remote communication. This is extremely important in the period of time while we're waiting to work on and hopefully pass a permanent amendment to the Corporations Code to allow for virtual and hybrid meetings going forward. It's extremely important to corporations in Alaska that this suspension of the in-person requirement continues. And I saw that the date in one version referenced a September 15th repeal date for this bill, and then in another it was only 1 month until March 15th. And for many corporations, that short period of time is just not going to do the trick. I mean, there are many corporations with meetings coming up just next month after the expiration of this bill. There are a handful of corporations that will be planning to hold meetings throughout the remainder of the year. And without certainty on whether or not remote communications will be allowed, it will be extremely difficult for them to plan for their meetings and notice their meetings. So I would ask the committee to consider that with respect to Section 8 of the bill, that a longer period of time prior to repeal be allowed, and that perhaps even the language is changed to reflect that the repeal of this section would occur on the later of the given date or the repeal of the emergency declaration by the governor. And I'm going to open it up for questions in case anybody has a question about that, but thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Jill, for calling in. Next, we have Bonnie Pascavan.
Thank you. I'm Jill McLeod, colleague at the Dorothy Anchorage office, and just echo Jill's remarks. So I don't have any additional comments I would like to make this time, but we're happy to answer questions about the importance of allowing virtual or remote shareholder meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. Next, Thor View from Anchorage.
Hi, good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Thor Vu. I'm the state's chief procurement officer. I don't have any public testimony. I'm here on behalf of the administration to help answer any questions that the committee may have in regards to emergency procurement.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have from Cooper Landing, Ed and Kathleen Martin. So, Kathleen, if you'd like to go first, followed by Ed.
Ma'am, my wife is a little bit busy right now, but I would like to speak on part of the Martin family, and this is Edward D. Martin, Jr. from Cooper Landing.
Go ahead, Ed.
I'd like to draw your attention. Yes, ma'am, Madam Chair. I'd like to draw your attention to what I've sent you just recently. There was a U.S. District Court case that took up the County of Butler versus Governor Wolf of Pennsylvania. These emergency powers have already been tested in the federal courts. The only thing that's lacking Alaska right now is the exact same thing, and somebody who has the will to do it, and believe me, I would be one if I was back in my great state where I could actually cause an action against this governor. And particularly now, has compounded it because he has extended emergency powers beyond his power to do so. And he's violated his oath, he's violated Alaska's laws, and he's violated the legislature. Now, you folks are currently moving forward with something you should just cease and desist on and move forward with new legislation that'll deal with exactly the situation we have. But if I can pull up the last pages in the conclusion by Judge William Stickman in the Federal District Court, basically he says, in conclusion of all the problems that COVID has created in this country and in our each individual states, for all intents and purposes, it does not fair weather our liberties in any form or fashion. And may I remind the first and second sections of Article 1 and 2 of our state constitution. Both of those are being currently violated. And believe me, it caused me harm and heartfelt sorrow that 18 U.S.C. 241, 242 is being exonerated again upon our bodies and our souls and our beings as Alaskans. And that's deprivation of rights under the color of law. We've got to get a handle on this, folks, and you're in the position to do it. I pray that you will. Now, I probably took up my time. My wife is busy talking to our son, and I'm not going to interrupt her. There may be another opportunity for her, but I thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Martin, for your comments on the legislation. Next, we have Vicki Jo Kennedy from Juneau. Vicki?
Yes, yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair, and all the senators. Welcome back to Juneau. And it's sort of like deja vu all over again. Here we are in the middle of this pandemic. We've got all the stuff going on back east at our Capitol and all the stuff going on here, so it's just the same old, same old. But I stand hard against Senate Bill 56, and here's a good reason why. I was in the hospital just a couple weeks ago, and they were sure I had the COVID. They were just sure of it. But I didn't, and it's a good thing I didn't, because I flew back on the same plane with about five or six other legislators. But I see the biggest death through this whole emergency extension that the governor has done is to our small businesses and the people here in Alaska. I mean, we've heard how much it's made people's mental health go down. We've heard it's caused, God love them, suicides in our young people. I mean, I've even heard of people's dogs being depressed. And I don't think that's made up. But I do want you to know that I stand against it. I do think that Governor Dunleavy has gone too far on this. And I know it's real. I know the pandemic's real. But give the people a chance to stay alive. Now that the cruise ship industry has once again not going to be able to come into Southeast, you might as well start putting the nails on the coffin up and down this side of Alaska. And that's a sad, sad thing. But maybe if we just give Canada some more money, and we wouldn't have been so hard on them for not joining the Coalition of the Willing in 2003 for that freaking little war called Iraq, maybe they wouldn't be so mad at us. But we've got laws that can change that, too, if it wasn't for these corporations trying to skirt around our laws for shipping. And I know a little bit about that. Senator Stevens can tell you that. I spent my whole life on sea. So anyway, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you coming back to Juneau, and Godspeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki, and I'm glad that you didn't have COVID and you're out of the hospital. I appreciate you following this and calling in to testify. Next, we have Herman Morgan. Herman?
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you great.
Yeah, I'm calling. My name is Herman Morgan. I'm calling from rural Alaska, and I agree with a lot of the other callers, and I heard you guys about no SB 56 because it's true in some other places the politicians are being charged with crimes against humanity by what they're doing with these lockdowns. And I heard you vote no because of inflated infection numbers and medication like ivermectin and hydrochloroquine that cure COVID within 48 hours. Thus, there's no concern for hospital bed shortage, which is the argument for emergency orders and lockdowns. It seems this is all about receiving federal disaster money. But in reality, it should not be all about federal money. It should be the horrible side effects and disasters these emergency orders are causing. It starts at the top, the governor leading by example. It's on his shoulders. In seeing the comments of some of these committee members already, you almost find it laughable, along with the commissioner, that is this emergency order affects communities that impose lockdowns. And some of your committee members' lack of capacity is beginning to show. This should be not be about more federal money, but about the thousands of Alaskans losing their jobs and kids not being educated because of these lockdowns fueled by emergency order. It should be also be about protecting Alaskans from an untested vaccine. It's not been tested. Vaccines are being used in other countries for genocide. In Africa, more young girls die of vaccines than from COVID. Some doctors are warning in 3 or 6 months of an explosion of deaths and life-threatening side effects from this vaccine. One important thing is why wasn't informed consent given? On talk radio, a young girl was saying she's nursing her baby and she's still vaccinated, even though that the Health and Social Service Committee a few months ago, they were told by Dr. Zink not to give these to young girls because it causes, for breastfeeding, it causes disease in their kids, causing infertility and birth defects. They were not given informed consent. All these villages, they got this vaccine that the doctors refused on stage, 40% of them. You guys got to stop what you're doing. You are destroying Alaska, end these lockdowns. On conclusion, on the 20th of January, the WHO announced by the PCR testing has been flawed by over-amplification, resulting to way many, way too many false positives. You guys got to stop what you're doing and end these lockdowns. Listen to the people. Don't listen to the people who have conflicts of interest. Thank you, and I yield my time.
Thank you very much, Herman. I appreciate your testimony, and many of the members are taking notes, and we certainly are listening to the public. I did want to ask if Alan Todd, you're online. Are you online to testify or just for questions?
I am, yes. Thank you.
Which one? To testify?
I would like to testify on Senate Bill 56, please.
Great. You could go ahead and provide your testimony to the committee.
Thank you. My name's Alan Todd. I'm general counsel at Doyon Limited. Been here for 20-some years now. And wanted to testify today chiefly on the impact of the amendments to Senate Bill 56. For Doyon Limited, we have our annual meeting coming up on March 19th. The way that this bill is currently written, in particular at Section 15, it would end on March 15th. That's a pretty significant problem for a corporation a large corporation such as Doyon, or mid-size, I guess we are. Anyway, to try to make changes to what happens with our annual meeting with such a short time before. We're currently planning on an electronic meeting, largely online, so that we don't have to have large numbers of shareholders gather and potentially be exposed to the virus. And the problem with this right now is if it ends 4 days before the date of our annual meeting and we're forced to have many of the shareholders in the room in order to comply with this law, I think it's going to create the potential for a problem. In short, though, I think the biggest issue with this is I think the suspension under Section 8 is appropriate. I think it helps in being able to conduct meetings of shareholders during this time. The concern I have is largely just with Section 15 and the expiration date. So with that, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I yield my time if there are any questions.
Thank you, and I did want to mention that Senator David Wilson has introduced Senate Bill 24, which essentially is that section that addresses the online meetings. That bill has had one hearing in this committee, and we will be hearing it next week. So I will have my aide reach out to you so that you can follow that bill and urge its passage. With that, is there anybody here in Juneau that would like to testify on Senate Bill 56? Okay. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify on Senate Bill 56?
Yes, Senator Costello, this is Mike Coons. I'm representing the MATSU Chapter AMAC Action. Just real quick, I agree with what's been going on for the previous committee, now what you got. I agree that if there is a possibility on the DOA, you know, to do the things on emergency procurement, so that's great. Because my main focus, my main concern is the senior citizens of the state. And I know I'm a special interest group on that, but just long as we can, what we do is focus so that the seniors that are most vulnerable are getting taken care of now and into the next couple months, where we can get everybody that wants to be vaccinated, and then still have the ability to get the rest of Alaska. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mike, and appreciate you calling my office and also calling in to testify. I do want to say that it is very important to vaccinate those who want to be vaccinated, seniors and those who are vulnerable. I know that my office has actually helped seniors get in line to get a vaccine because they've had some trouble with the online interface. My office is at 269-0117, and we've helped folks walk through that process. Please know that one of the questions that we've repeatedly been asking the administration is the need for this in terms of the vaccinations for folks who want to get them and the money that's coming from the federal government. So that is a narrow focus. The bill has a lot of different issues, and I'm sure you heard of those. And I do want to mention there are three bills already that are in the process: Senate Bill 78, Senate Bill 77, Senate Bill 24, and there are more bills coming that would take a deeper dive into some of the issues that are in this bill that are could be considered ancillary to the public health crisis itself, and the spread of the vaccine, or excuse me, the distribution of the vaccine. So that's why you've heard some kind of tough questions today for the department, because we want to know why the administration requires Senate Bill 56 in order to address the public health needs of Alaskans. So with that, I'll ask one more time, are there any members of the public online who would like to testify on Senate Bill 56? Again, is there anyone here in Juneau? There isn't.
Now I'm going to open public.
So I do also want to mention that for anyone listening, we welcome your comments in writing. And again, the members of the committee have been taking notes on the public testimony. So with that, I'm going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 56, and I will take a brief at ease before we move into the amendment process. Okay, I'd like to welcome back Senate Labor and Commerce, and we are currently reviewing the governor's extension of the disaster declaration of Senate Bill 56. And now we're moving into the amendment process. I have two amendments before the committee. Both of them are mine. And so I would like to, Senator Holland, are you ready to move Amendment 1?
Can we have a more experienced member of the committee?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That would be Senator Stevens.
I don't have my what to say when
Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, I move Amendment number 1.
Okay. And I'll object for the sake of discussion. So I would like to have my aide, Katie McCall, explain this amendment, and then we actually have the legal drafter online. Andrew is online to explain further the amendment. Andrew Dunmeyer, who drafted this amendment for our office. So with that, Katie.
Good afternoon, Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, Chair Costello. For the record, my name is Katie McCall, staff to Senator Costello. This is amendment number 1. By Senator Costello. On page 5, following line 22, it will insert a new subsection to read, notwithstanding AS 2623050B, the expenditure of state funds to cope with the effects of the declaration of a public health disaster emergency issued by the governor on January 15, 2021, as extended by Section 2 of this Act, is limited to the appropriations and expenditure authority identified in A and B of this section. So this amendment limits appropriations and expenditures, and we have Andrew Dunmeyer with Legal Services online to give you a more detailed explanation of exactly what this accomplishes.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate that. Andrew, are you online, and can you explain the rationale for introduction of this amendment?
Yes, Chair Costello. This amendment takes language that was in SB 241 and puts it into SB 56. And what it does is basically overrides 2623050, which normally would say that the governor may appropriate money for the use of the disaster from other purposes, and this amendment would make it clear that the legislature is saying that he can only appropriate the funds that are in SB 56.
Okay. And Andrew, we have a member who was not here last session, so Senate Bill 241, Senator Holland, was the legislature in the previous legislative session addressing the governor's emergency declaration. And so what it does is when we looked at this legislation and compared it to Senate Bill 41, I thought Senate Bill 41's language was tighter and gave more oversight to the legislative branch. It does not impede any ability to use funds. It just involves the legislature. And with that, Katie, I want to thank you for introducing that legislation. I'd like to invite Commissioner Crum up to comment on the department's position on the amendment. Welcome, Commissioner Crum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Commissioner Crum. Amendment number 1, it matches language that we originally put forward in SB 241 as priorly passed by the legislature, so this follows along with the intent we see it as well.
So, Commissioner Crum, you're in support of this amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay.
Thank you. So I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection to Amendment 1? Okay, seeing no objection, Amendment 1 passes. Thank you, Commissioner. Next, we have Amendment 2, also introduced by myself, and I'd like to invite Katie McCall forward to share Amendment 2.
Want a motion to amend,
Senator Stevens?
Motion to
Senator Stevens has a motion to amend.
Oh, no, Madam Chair.
Oh, let's adopt it first.
The motion is to adopt.
Yeah. Senator Stevens, could you please move to adopt the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we adopt amendment number 2.
Do you want to make that amendment now?
Certainly.
And Senator Stevens?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make an amendment to the amendment number 2 on page 2, line 2. It should say October 2019 and October 2020. Just a simple typo.
Thank you, Senator Stevens, for that friendly amendment. Is there any objection to correcting the date so that we're not predicting job loss into the future? Great. So seeing no objection, that friendly amendment to Amendment 2 passes. Katie?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Katie McCall, staff to Senator Costello. Amendment number 2 by Senator Costello. Page 2, line 1 through page 3, line 23, delete all material and insert findings. The legislature finds that on March 11, 2020, the governor issued a declaration of a public health disaster emergency under AS 2623020 in anticipation of the spread of COVID-19 to the state and has since issued multiple new disaster declarations for the COVID-19 outbreak. Since the initial outbreak through the present day, the outbreak of COVID-19 has resulted in serious consequences for residents of the state and the state's economy. Many communities in this state, including the state's largest city of Anchorage and the capital city of Juneau, have seen fit to impose lockdown or hunker down orders, which have severely reduced economic activity in those communities. Lockdown orders and other pandemic-related factors have forced numerous state businesses to close their doors and lay off employees or reduce service levels and employee hours far below what would otherwise have been provided, to the detriment of both those businesses and their hardworking employees. Interstate and intrastate travel restrictions of varying levels of restrictiveness, while intended to contain the spread of COVID-19, have resulted in further reduction of economic activities in the state. The state has established and facilitated multiple programs to provide economic assistance to struggling state residents and businesses, but the programs, while providing much-needed relief, generally fall short of fully replacing regular levels of voluntary economic activity. As a result of voluntary and government-imposed reductions of economic activity, the state lost 29,000 jobs between October 2019 and October 2020. Many businesses in the state have temporarily or permanently closed. At least 45,000 students in the Anchorage School District have been denied in-person education for a significant period during the pandemic. This shift from in-person learning to distance learning has negatively affected students in the state in terms of the state's learning progression and emotional and social development. The shift from in-person learning to distance learning has been associated with increased instances of child abuse and food insecurity. Multiple vaccines for COVID-19 have been developed and are currently being distributed, allowing the state to move into a new phase of its COVID-19 recovery efforts. Due in part to the state's robust COVID-19 response efforts, the state currently has the third lowest COVID-19 fatality rate in the United States. And because of the diligent efforts of the state, Alaska has the highest vaccination rate of all 50 states. Page 3, lines 25 through 27, delete extend the public health disaster emergency declaration issued by the governor on January 15, 2021, and all the powers granted under AS 1815-15390 and AS 2623020 to March 15, 2021. Insert take appropriate steps to continue to contain the spread of COVID-19 and to distribute COVID-19 vaccines statewide with the utmost diligence and dispatch. Take appropriate steps to limit further harm to the state's economy, to enable displaced workers in the state to return to work, and to allow students in the state to rejoin in-person classes with their peers, and extend the public health disaster emergency declaration issued by the governor on January 15, 2021, and all the powers granted under AS 1815-390 and AS 2623020 to March 15, 2021.
Thank you, Katie. I appreciate that for sharing the the new findings section. Are there any comments from committee members? I'll go ahead and remove my objection to Amendment 2. Is there any further objection to Amendment 2? Okay, seeing none, Amendment 2 passes. Senator Stevens, we'll take a brief at ease. Committee is called back to order. Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, I move to pass Senate Bill 56 out of committee with individual recommendations.
And attached fiscal
note? And attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the bill to the next committee of referral? Okay, seeing none, Senate Bill 56 moves to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We will take a brief at ease to assign the documentation and then come back for any final comments of committee members. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order. We've had a suggestion to redo the motion to move the bill. So, Senator Stevens.
Madam Speaker, Madam Chairman, I move that we pass Senate Bill 56 out of committee as amended with the attached fiscal notes and our signatures.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 56 out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes? Okay, seeing none, the bill so moves. We'll take a brief at ease to finish the paperwork. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee has been called back to order. I want to thank the members for reviewing this legislation. I think we've made a point that there are some things in here that could be better addressed through standalone legislation. So we do have those bills, and they would make our statutes more COVID aware as we move and hopefully move into a period where restrictions are lifted, vaccines are continuing to be distributed to those who want them, and we can get our kids back to school. I do recognize that that is not something that's in the purview of the governor, but in the findings section, it's the intent of the legislature that we move into a time in our state where Alaskans can return to living their lives as they see fit. So with that, I want to thank the members. And Friday's meeting, we will be hearing Senator Machicki's Senate Bill 9. This is the alcohol beverage control legislation, the Title IV legislation. We've heard several sessions before, but we will have this session the first time he will be presenting that bill Friday at 1:30. So with that, the committee is adjourned.